Hello, and welcome to Ag Tech Talk, Agribusiness Global's podcast exploring the latest technological innovations, tools, and services moving the crop input community forward. In each episode, we talk with industry experts for their insights on ag tech solutions being developed around the world and how they could impact your business. Whether it's agricultural technology you'll find in the field, in the air, or on a computer or tablet, we'll talk about it here. I'm your host, Dan Jacobs, Senior Editor with Agribusiness Global. Today, we're talking with Russ Putland, Executive Vice President, Commercial and General Manager USA for Lavie Bio, and Nir Arbel, Chief Product Officer with Evagene, Lavie Bio's parent company. In this two-part podcast, we will be exploring how Lavie Bio used Evagene's MicroBoost AI technology engine to help develop a pair of new biological products. The first half of our discussion focuses on the technology, MicroBoost AI, and how it led to those two new products being developed. The second part will focus on the challenges of bringing those products through the regulatory and adoption processes. Hello, Russ and Nir. Thanks for being with us today.
Let's do a little bit of background on the company. You know, maybe you can give me sort of that elevator speech, as we say, you know, that 30-second background on, you know, what it is you're offering and what you're doing and what sort of separates you from, you know, other players in the market.
So Lavie Bio was born out of Evagene, which is our parent company, who provides us, you know, the technology and the AI, big data, and that foundation. You know, we strive to improve food quality, sustainability, agricultural productivity, and we do that through the microbiome, right? Through microbes. That's the whole idea. And in doing that with microbes, you know, we have to leverage that technology to be able to do that. So that's kind of the high-end view of what we try to do. And really, it's about replacing synthetic products or enhancing food production to be healthier, sustainable. And to do those two things, you've got to have productive agriculture and you've got to have increased value. You know, it's nice to have an altruistic view of the world where we're going to, you know, make it a better environmental place and we're going to save our soil. But in order to do that, if you don't have financial sustainability underneath it all, it fails. The product's got to stand and, you know, produce more or produce better or produce attributes. You know, there's a whole bunch of different ways you can do it. But at the end of the day, it has to be financially sustainable. So that's what we strive to do, is put those tools in our producers' hands so that they can grow either more bushels or more targeted bushels or healthier bushels of grain or fruit or vegetables, depending on what market we're in. And then in turn, have the supply chain recognize that value all the way up to the consumer, where the consumer is willing to pay for healthier or better or increased value in the food.
You know, the microbiome, I mean, that's we've been hearing so much about that recently. I know we've written stories about it. Where are we in the process of understanding what's there? You know, all the different, you know, pieces, parts that make up that microbiome.
Yeah, it's very different than, well, you know, if you compare it to traditional synthetic chemistry in agriculture or even human health, it's very, very different in that, you know, there's billions of microbes, right, in the world. And in the synthetic world, we've run out of groups and active ingredients, and we haven't really seen a bunch of innovation or new since the 80s, to be honest. And now, with being able to tap into these billions of microbes, it becomes more of a challenge to figure out which ones are beneficial. You know, they're there, and we have this wonderful, you know, microbes that do great things, but we need to be able to see them clear so that you can actually make them living factories in a plant. You know, and use them for positive use, right, in a natural way.
If I may chime here, I think also the field of microbiome with microbes and understanding it is quite a nascent field. I think it's had a huge leap in the last 10, 15 years. But in terms of life science product development, that's pretty much born yesterday. So I think there is... you know, it's a very exciting field. You see a lot of investors interested in the space. You see a lot of companies going into the space. But I think that the true magic of this field is yet to come. There's so much more to learn. There's so much more to understand. And we're really just scratching the surface right now.
Okay. Maybe this is a good time then to talk about the solutions that, you know, the company is offering. I mean, you mentioned MicroBoost AI. you know, the tech engine. How does that play into what it is that, you know, how the microbiome and the products you're trying to come up with?
Right. So I mean, MicroBoost AI has, you know, started out becoming an engine several years ago when Evogen, you know, decided to use or leverage its know-how and technology in the genomic space. So the basis of MicroBoost AI is the ability to understand genomics, but not as previously Evogen looked mostly at plants, now looking at the microbes and understanding the genomics of the microbes very well. And then what it's challenged when you want to look at the microbial communities is that there's so much information that you need to delve through to really understand what it is you're looking at, what it is you're trying to find. It's truly a needle in the haystack at any given time. So what we are trying to do with coming up with our solutions is to deconvolute those, you know, very challenging questions. So to the basis of MicroBoost AI was to collect a very significant amount of genomes, of microbial genomes, and break those down into genes. And those genes to then in turn understand what their functionalities are and to group them together. So we have, if not the biggest database, but one of the biggest databases in the world for microbial genes and their functions, which is Catalan. So we are able to cluster genes together towards understanding what are those functionalities. And that can be leveraged by LaVie, obviously, because when they're looking to develop products and discover new microbes, they can utilize these catalogs to try and understand what sort of functionality they're looking for, where does this functionality exist, and in what bacteria within their refrigerators or within, you know, the public domain that they can reach out towards, they can find these certain functionalities. So that would be probably, I think, the, you know, the biggest advantage of MicroBoost AI. And then on top of that, what we can do by understanding the genomics is to run very sophisticated comparisons between different samples or different microbes. And what that allows the scientists to do is to compare and discover new functionalities and the genes related to those functionalities, meaning that if you know, and maybe this is a good example. So LaVie Bio was looking for a long time at what genes would be related to shelf life, which is a non-obvious question, right? So bacteria don't necessarily, or evolution didn't guide them towards shelf life, obviously, but they are, at the end of the day, they do have some sort of shelf life as a product. So what MicroBoost AI was able to do for LaVie was to, once looking at bacteria that were had a good shelf life and those that hadn't, was to highlight which genes are most likely to be or provide their microbes or their product with a good shelf life. And that has huge impact when, you know, looking to develop a product as well.
Yeah, so you think about the why does that matter? Well, it's a matter of you need the microbes to stay alive while you're using them, right? And to establish and to, you know, to create that living factory within a plant. Also, from a commercial standpoint, it's pretty nice to have it where you can keep the product for a year and still use it, right? From an inventory management, there's a commercial aspect to that as well as not just a viability, you know?
Sure, that makes a lot of sense. I'm sure there are a lot of factors that go into consider, you know, when you're developing a product. And I know, you know, I've heard stories about, well, at least in the traditional synthetic products, you know, it could take, you know, a dozen years, hundreds of millions of dollars. And then that's the product that actually makes it, you know, and that's done, you're not even counting all the things that you try and, you know, get a year into it and figure out it's not working and then sort of start over or you know, revamp or whatever. Are there advantages? I mean, does it save you time? Does it save you money? I mean, are you be able to explore more options early on? I mean, what are some of the other advantages to be able to use, you know, an AI tech engine, you know, to look at these issues. And you know, again, you're, as you mentioned, Russ, you know, there's billions of microbes out there, and you know, trying to figure out how they all, you know, work together. You know, some you have in some places, some you don't have in other places. I mean, there's just the variables, you know, the permutations, just, you know, are probably practically endless. You know, is that what this can help with?
I'll maybe just walk through a high level of our process and then let Nir speak to the technology underneath it. I think it would serve us well. So it's not different than synthetic chemistry in that you start with a product requirement, right? We have to know what we're trying to build, why we're trying to build it. You know, we've got to think about what it's going to cost to build us and, you know, what the cogs are going to be to build it and whether it is usable in today's environment and regulation, you know. So all that piece gets, you know, what is the need and what does that product look like? And the closer you get that at the start, the better you're going to be through the whole process. You know, then it goes kind of into Nir's world where, you know, they've mapped these genes into functions and, you know, that's all being done and cataloged, right? And, you know, we've had a catalog that was called Taxon that we purchased. We've got some, you know, public domain microbes that we know a lot about and we've added to that. Israel's a great place to source microbes because you have all different climates, right? So you've got a whole bunch of diversity right in the country. So it's very fortunate for us. You know, and as you map those, you start to pick out the single microbes or the consortia of microbes that fits that product requirement. And then it, you know, MicroBoost takes over, right? You know, you start to pull from there and pull combinations. And, you know, I've heard our science leaders say that, you know, there's combinations come out as suggestions to that this will work that traditional science just wouldn't put together. It's just not a reality. Nir, will you want to take the technology piece maybe a little deeper?
Sure, of course. Russ, you know, spoke exactly to the point, and I think that this is something that's crucial for people to understand that, you know, the computational is not there to give out a final product. So no one is expecting that we put information into the computer and some sort of AI that would give out a single microbe that is, you know, the perfect solution. The whole point of what we're trying to do is de-risk the entire process by identifying fewer and more achievable amounts of microbes that you can test and that would give you the insight that, you know, it actually works and the prediction was good enough. So that I think that the way that, you know, efficiency and cost saving works is that as Russ mentioned, right, you start out with the product requirements, you try to understand what it is you need. You can go to the catalogs and kind of pick out the genes that you need in advance. But usually what would happen is that there would still be some functionalities that you're not absolutely sure what are the related genes, and then building out the correct experiments that would, you know, come from either the public domain for publications or would come out, you know, from the experimental aspects of the company and feeding them correctly into the algorithms that can then flush out, you know, the highest rewarding genes for that functionality. And the point at the end would be is, you know, connecting all those dots together. Because if you want just an efficacy aspect, it's quite easy to find, right? Because you would easily find a bacteria that is, you know, antifungal or, you know, anti-insects and so on and so on. But then that's not, you know, then does not fulfill all the product requirements. You need COGS as well. You need regulatory aspects as well. And combining all of those together in quite efficient and rapid pace is what allows the scientists to come out with what they feel is the best potential product and to test that out. And that's with the simple solution of coming up with only one bacteria as a product. Once you want to look for more than one bacteria to build a consortium, then everything I said gets, you know, exponentially more complicated. And it's a necessity to use computational tools here because teaming bacteria is definitely not straightforward. So figuring out how they would work together is, you know, is a very challenging question. There are multiple solutions out there, but, you know, using computational tools is very, very effective towards that. So combining all these attributes together is what, you know, is key, but then, you know, really testing them out and making sure that it works is what, you know, really saves cost and time. And maybe just as a last point, that, like I mentioned previously, looking at shelf life is also key, right? And that's definitely a time and cost saving, because the attrition rate for bacteria that have poor shelf life is around 30%. Meaning, and you know, just to be reminded that shelf life is usually the last thing that you test, because you go through the entire process and develop your product, and then the last thing you'll do is, you know, grow it and then put it on the shelf and test it every few months to make sure that it, you know, it's sustainable and has a long shelf life. And if you figure out 6 months later that shelf life is bad, then you have to go back, right? And with a 30% attrition rate, that's, you know, that means, you know, three or four out of every 10 products that you develop would fail at that point. So by being able to predict what are the genes that would contribute to shelf life and scanning the bacteria from the get-go and making sure that they contain these genes, would really reduce the risk of failing at that conflict. And that would save a lot of time.
Thanks for joining us. The first part of our two-part discussion with Nir and Ross about how Lavie Bio used technology to develop a pair of biological products the company is hoping to share with growers dealing with pest challenges. Make sure to join us for the second part, where Nir and Ross discuss the regulatory and adoption challenges to bring those products to the market.